More Idaho Matters right now. Sunday marked a grim milestone here in Idaho. It was the second anniversary of the first official case of COVID-19 here in our state. It has been more than 2 years since the pandemic began. So we wanted to take a look back today on our Dr. Roundtable, and we want to look ahead, unfortunately, to the surge that we're seeing overseas of a new variant. And if you have a question for our doctors, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Joining us live today, Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Good to have you with us, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
Excuse me. So over the last 2 years, close to 5,000 people have died from the coronavirus just here in Idaho, Dr. Pate. More than 400,000 people got COVID. Have you been, and during this time, I mean, you have been helping us through this pandemic every Wednesday, I mean, for 2 years now, Dr. Pate.
Yeah.
When did you first start getting concerned about this virus? Because I remember you coming on our program, I think it was about maybe January of 2020, talking about this and you know, saying, well, we need to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, that's right. I think that the point where I got really concerned was the big outbreak in the nursing home in Washington State. Remember that? Where we saw the pictures on TV of the, you know, the ambulances pulling up to that nursing home, them putting up sheets and other things to try to obscure the view. And they were wheeling residents out and taking to the hospital. You know, I was pretty concerned at that point. And I knew that at that point, okay, it's coming to Idaho.
Mm-hmm. And let's fast forward, because we did not have a vaccine until December of 2020. And it took a while to get it to everyone who wanted it. In your mind, has the vaccine been a game changer in the pandemic?
Well, yes. I will tell you the way that it hasn't changed the game is the disinformation, misinformation, and anti-vax movements have caused a lower uptake of the vaccine than we would have predicted. And we've had more deaths since that has been available, which it should be going the other way. But yes, let me tell you, the fact that we had, and not just one, but we had two safe and effective vaccines that were developed, tested, and ready for emergency use authorizations by the end of that first year. I mean, that's mind-blowing. It's just an incredible testament to where we are in science and medicine today that we could do something like that that none of us could have ever imagined happening in the past.
Mm-hmm. So yesterday, there was a meeting of Idaho Health and Welfare, and the public health administrator said, and I want to read a direct quote, said, quote, "We're entering a new phase. Cases and test positivity are now low, but the pandemic is not over," end quote. So Dr. Pate, what does this new phase look like to you? Because I would love to say, yep, it's over. Let's all take our masks off and, you know, just move on with life. But I feel like there's a balancing act we still need to play.
Yeah. Well, you know, and all of this pandemic has gone through so many different phases. I am confident this is not what that person meant who was interviewed, mm-hmm. because I know her and talk to her frequently, so I know what she thinks. But I think a lot of people that are talking heads nationally keep on talking about this new phase, which is code for that it's either code for now we're going to live with the virus, which is a little bit ridiculous, or that we are now endemic is a very common notion. And I even heard one of these talking heads who I have a great deal of respect for, but he was talking about, oh, well, the upcoming warm weather is probably going to help. And I'm like, what in the world are you talking about? There is no evidence of that. So people mean different things by this. And I think everybody wants to think the best. And that new phase means that we're not going to have impacts to our economy. We're not going to have impacts to our schools. We're not going to have impacts to our healthcare system. That, yeah, a few people are going to get infected, but no big deal. And my fear is that's what people think that means. You know, let's be clear. We have just come off of our highest surge yet. And we are just getting over it. And guess what? If you go back and look at all of our previous surges, what happened? They were followed by another surge. And so, you know, the question is, what's different? And a lot of people like to say, well, we have a whole lot more immunity. That I don't buy. If you can look at other countries that have more quote unquote immunity than the United States has, and they're on fire. They're having big surges. So I don't buy that. Another legitimate way to think of it is what could be different is that at least now we do have more therapeutic options. But I would also be quick to point out that we have therapeutic options come and go because some of them stop working when you get new variants that are no longer susceptible to those old treatments. So we should not get complacent. But yes, I mean, of course, we're coming off of a surge. We've got lower disease transmission, which is fantastic. But I think it is, you know, we've made this mistake many times before. We've declared after every surge in the past that, okay, it's over, only to be followed by another surge. So I would say it's a little too early to write history on this one.
And Dr. Pate, there has been some criticism about this idea of we're in a new phase. And I'm not talking just statewide, but nationally, because there are immunocompromised people. There are still children 5 and under that cannot be vaccinated yet. I have a 9-month-old niece. My sister and brother-in-law's life has basically been continued to be put on hold so that they can keep their daughter safe. So can you talk about that? I mean, it feels as if we have kind of forgotten about the fact that we need to care for one another.
Well, and that's the understatement. It's in so many areas of our lives today that we're seeing evidence of people only putting their own interests above the interests of others. And it's not just limited to COVID. And this is a real unfortunate thing. Fortunately for me, I hear plenty of stories of people that don't get a lot of media attention that are just doing incredible things to help other people. And so thank God for all of those people out there. But yeah, I do think we need to be very careful. And that's part of why I was very disappointed with the latest CDC guidance. Not that we don't need to think about masking differently at this point. I get that. But it's the point that it really does not acknowledge several things. You've mentioned two. One, that we have a lot of people that remain at high risk, even if they're vaccinated. Maybe they're immunocompromised, maybe their age, their underlying health conditions. We also have that group of children under 5 who are not yet able to be vaccinated. And I'll tell you, you look at some of these other countries, I know you're going to want to talk about BA2 in a minute. You look at what's coming, the reports coming out of UK, the fastest growing segment of children is 0 to 5 that are being hospitalized. And so we do have to keep in mind them. And then I think the other thing is we still have to keep in mind that even people that have been vaccinated, there may be some waning of immunity. Even those people that have been infected, they may have a waning of immunity. They may have a false sense of self-protection. So there's just a lot to be humbled by of all the questions we don't know the answer to, but we're going to find out very soon. And we may find out the hard way.
If you have questions, get them in, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. So, Dr. Pate, as we are lifting restrictions here in the United States, we are seeing lower numbers. There is a new variant, BA2, that is surging overseas. I mean, China has put certain provinces on lockdown. The United Kingdom is seeing cases skyrocketing. Can you update us on all of that and then what that eventually means for the United States?
Well, Gemma, you're right to be focusing on what's going on around the world, because I do think oftentimes it is some of the best clues as to what we can expect. There's not a perfect correlation. In other words, just because something happens in another country doesn't mean it will happen here. But In a constantly changing situation where we at least want to be, you know, forearmed and forewarned, it's a great way to do it. And I have been sharing that with you through the last 2 years. I look to see what's happening in other countries. So what are we seeing? What we're seeing is that this BA2, which is just another form of Omicron. But let me tell you, there's a lot of difference between BA2 and the Omicron that we just went through, which is BA1. Those two are still, even though they're both Omicron, they are very, very different in some ways that may mean that you're not, even if you've been infected with the first one, you may not necessarily be protected from the second one. Most people probably will be. But what is different? One is it's more transmissible. And so that's always bad news, especially when you decrease mitigations, when you're going to have people together, sport, school, office building, whatever. And at the same time, you're decreasing your mitigation measures, masks, distancing, et cetera. So it is of concern. What are we seeing? We're seeing several different things. One is we're seeing some countries that, particularly in Europe, that already had fairly significant Omicron of the type we just had, and now are having big surges of this new Omicron, BA2. So I've heard a lot of people saying, oh, the United States is not going to have a surge with BA2 because we just had a surge with BA1. That's just nonsense. That's not what has happened at all. So disregard that. Secondly, we have seen some places really take off in cases. And one of the things that has a lot of people have talked about is that we don't need to worry about that, but because of this underlying population immunity, that we'll see what's called a dissociation between the number of cases and the number of hospitalizations and deaths. In other words, yeah, we are going to see a lot of infections, but we're just not going to see many people hospitalized and dying from this. That's not what we're seeing in many places. And so I think that's also false reassurance that in other words, it doesn't mean that if we do have a BA2 surge, people get sick, but they just won't end up in the hospital. That's not what we've largely been seeing. The third thing is when we look at some of the Asian countries and a couple of big ones right now, Hong Kong and another one is South Korea to look at. What we see in Hong Kong is dramatic increase in cases and deaths, health systems getting overwhelmed. They're running out of ventilators, running out of oxygen. Their problem is that they kind of have a reverse U.S. problem. In their country, younger people are much more trusting of the vaccines and have been vaccinated. But when you look at the older population, and particularly those over 80, a lot of those folks, probably because of what they've been through with China and other countries, they have a big distrust of government. So they have very low rates of vaccination in the most vulnerable. And that's why they're having as bad a problem as they are. And then we see countries like South Korea that have managed this very well and have had very low levels of COVID all along. Now they're having a huge surge because, again, they're kind of letting their guard down. On the other hand, they're not seeing the death rate that Hong Kong is because they have a much higher vaccinated population. So what do we say about the U.S.? Well, if you look at the U.S., back about 6 weeks ago, the prevalence of BA2 was about 1%. In other words, if you look at all the cases where we do the genetic sequencing, only about 1% of those were showing up BA2. That has been steadily increasing. And now we are approaching 25%. And it's very different across the country. We have much higher levels on the two coasts, and particularly the northeastern coast is the highest right now. So what I say is watch New York, watch Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Vermont, watch those states. If BA2 really takes off there, then we need to get ready for it here in Idaho. But you know, again, there's so much about this that we don't understand. I was very concerned back last March that we were going to have a big alpha surge here in Idaho. We didn't, but Washington State and Oregon did. And no one can explain. I have no answer and nobody else can explain it. So all we can do is say, anybody trying to give you a prognostication, they're not likely correct. But I can tell you some of the things being thrown out there in public are absolutely not correct.
I want to get to a couple of questions. So Connie sent this in and she says, I've heard that childhood diabetes is on the increase due to COVID. She says, Dr. Pate, have you heard this?
Yes. So we actually first heard this out of Italy in 2020. The doctors there were telling us that is very strange. They were seeing twice the number of people being admitted to hospital for new onset insulin-dependent diabetes than they would normally have. And so that certainly got a little bit of attention, a little bit of concern, but it wasn't until later when we looked at this issue more that we saw that the pancreas, if you look at the distribution of the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas and you look at the same distribution of ACE2 receptors, it's almost a perfect overlap. And so what we do believe is that the virus, either directly or indirectly or both, is able to kill or injure cells in the pancreas, reducing the ability to produce insulin and causing diabetes. And now we have the studies as of this year to show that, yes, indeed, there is a causal connection. So, yes, we are seeing more cases of diabetes as a consequence of infection with COVID.
Dan from Boise writes in saying, I've read that with this new variant, even if you have been vaccinated, boosted, but you've never had COVID, you are at a higher risk of getting this new variant. True or false?
Well, I'm not sure higher risk than what. So there certainly is some indication that if you recently were infected with Omicron, and here in the United States, we'd be talking about BA1, that it looks like you only have about a 5% chance of being infected with BA2. Now, I would throw out caution on this. I suspect we are missing many cases of reinfection, and here's why. We typically use the definition that we're not going to count something as a reinfection if it occurs within 90 days. So in other words, Gemma, if you had a positive PCR test, let's say 2 months ago, and that got reported, and so we count you as a case of COVID, but let's say you got well, you got sick again, you go in and get a COVID test today, we will not count that as a case because it's within 90 days. And that's what we saw prior to Omicron, that we didn't typically see reinfections occurring very quickly. It looked like you had at least 3 months protection. But what we are getting reports out of Denmark and other countries that are seeing a lot of BA2 is that, in fact, they're seeing reinfections in 4 to 6 weeks with the new Omicron. So we may be very much undercounting the number of reinfections. So we just don't know the answer of that. There's some protection if you've recently been infected by the first Omicron that we've had. We're just not quite sure how much. With respect to the vaccinated people, if you are what we call fully vaccinated, which is not really fully vaccinated, means you have your two shots, you are going to be at higher risk than if you're boosted. If you are boosted, and particularly if you are within about a couple of months of having been boosted, you're going to have really good protection. But we're having some debates about what's happening to that degree of protection the longer out you are from that boost. And I'm sure that the CDC and FDA are going to be reevaluating all of that new data very soon to determine whether those that have been boosted needed to get another booster. So I'm not sure that anybody should be feeling particularly confident about that they can just be cavalier if we do have a BA2 surge.
We want to switch gears for these last couple of minutes and talk about a protest yesterday at St. Luke's Hospital in downtown Boise. According to the Associated Press, St. Luke's went on lockdown after activist Ammon Bundy told his supporters to go there and hold a protest over a child protection case. Now, the hospital locked down at 3:30, told patients they could not come to St. Luke's because they couldn't let anyone in or out of the building. The lockdown lasted an hour and a half, and there were patients that needed to be admitted that were not during that time. Dr. Pate, we first want to say that when we do talk about this today, you are not speaking for St. Luke's in this matter. You were the CEO of a large health system before you retired. So can you talk a little bit about what happened yesterday in the context of how a hospital system plays into a child protective case?
Yeah. So, Gemma, you know, this case, unfortunately, is being politicized. And like most of the other challenges that we've had with COVID and all, it's another politicalization. The law is very clear. The law is very clear what healthcare providers have to do, what the police have to do, and not complying with the law has some serious consequences. So, let me just first say that if you're in that group of people that are somehow upset about what has happened here, you don't need to be protesting healthcare providers or the police. You need to go protest your legislators to change the law because they are following the law. The second thing is that we need to be clear in our state about who are we going to protect other than ourselves? Are we going to protect children in this state? And if so, then we need to understand that there are times that we are going to have to intervene to do them, to do that. And our healthcare providers are doing their job and they're doing what's required by law. There is no need to threaten them, to make them afraid. And similarly, when you protest and you get into areas of the property you shouldn't be on, it's fine. If you want to go protest, get on the sidewalk, stay out of the path of the driveways to the emergency room, stay out of the patient care areas. Don't try to enter those areas. Go on the sidewalks and you can protest. That's fine. But when you are causing a compromise to the security, now you're threatening other people's lives because you're concerned about your issue, because we can't get ambulances in, we can't get other patients in, and you're going to cause harm. So if you want to protest, go down to the Capitol, go down to where your legislator office is, write letters, do whatever you want to do, but please don't threaten the police. Don't threaten healthcare workers. Don't dox police officers. I mean, this is not how you protest in the United States.
And Dr. Pate, we have about 2 minutes left. And again, you are not representing St. Luke's, but I do want to ask you that it doesn't seem to make sense to protest at a hospital because the hospital did not go and get the child. They are treating a patient.
Well, that's right. And if I got a speeding ticket, it doesn't do me any good to go protest at the officer's house because he gave me a ticket because he just did his job or her job and I broke the law. So if you want the law changed, then don't protest at the people that are just following the law. Protest or express your opinions to those who actually make and can change our laws. But St. Luke's and all the healthcare providers, they've been through so much. We have to stop allowing a small group of people to paint healthcare workers as the enemy. And we need to all stand up to it because let me tell you, we're driving people out of the field. And then when you mm-hmm. want that healthcare, it's not going to be there for you. So we need legislators to stand up and say this isn't right. We need other public leaders to stand up and say this isn't right. And the public needs to say this isn't right. You can be upset about the issue, but don't take it out on the police or take it out on healthcare workers.
Or shut down a hospital so that other children and other people cannot get the care that they need.
Especially that.
I want to thank you so much, Dr. Pate, for talking with us today about this issue as well as COVID-19. If you have questions, please get them into us and we will get them answered next week, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Coming up tomorrow on Idaho Matters, we'll find out how a nonprofit group hosted 150 families last year. Also, a preview of the Sun Valley Film Festival. I want to thank all of you for joining us today. Our senior producer is Samantha Wright. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.